I am joined by my partner in banter, Matt Bellany of The Hollywood Reporter. Hello, Matt. So, Rose McGowan has now sued Harvey Weinstein, and she, of course, has alleged for some time that he raped her, and she's among many women who have alleged that he assaulted them. She's also naming David Boies, his lawyer, advisor, slash enabler, and Lisa Bloom, a supposed women's rights lawyer who became another Harvey enabler, tried to help him launder his terrible reputation. She's suing them. She's claiming that they engaged in a racketeering, wiretap violations, all kinds of stuff. She's also suing Black Cube, which was the intelligence agency that was hired to pursue Ronan Farrow and apparently her. So she is making all these allegations. I'm going to focus on one detail because I had, you know, spent a lot of time, as you know, writing about Roy Price, who is the head of Amazon Studios and alleged misconduct. And in this lawsuit, she alleges that Roy Price bought a screenplay that she had written. This is in 2016, so it's about a year before Harvey is finally the subject of exposés in The New Yorker and New York Times. She says he bought this screenplay from her. She then found out that Harvey was doing a huge deal with Roy Price and Amazon, which Harvey desperately needed. The Weinstein Company was in trouble. She goes to Roy Price and says, "This guy raped me." Roy Price responds, "That's not proven." And then she finds out that her project is killed. And what she is saying in this litigation is, "This guy did this to help out Harvey. He wanted to know what was in my project. He wanted to see if there was anything that would be detrimental to him. He wanted to silence me." And certainly this does appear to be the kind of back-scratching arrangement among a certain type of man that does silence women, because there was some reciprocity, not just this huge deal that Roy gave Harvey, but Harvey did favors for Roy.
Yeah, and it looks here like this was an effort to bring Rose into the tent, so to speak. And it's what Harvey did with Lisa Bloom. The first move that Harvey made on Lisa Bloom was to option her book to develop into a film project. And all of a sudden, you know, a few months later, Lisa Bloom is then representing Harvey Weinstein and leveraging her reputation as a women's rights advocate to protect this alleged serial predator. And obviously it blew up in both of their faces. But this seemed to be the tactic. And it just goes to the overall level of effort that Harvey Weinstein put into keeping his behavior secret. I mean, if you read this Ronan Farrow book, especially, the lengths to which he went were extraordinary. There was a Black Cube operative whose job was to befriend Rose McGowan and be integrated into her life. And all of a sudden, Rose is disclosing things to her and showing her portions of the book. And this operative is going directly back to Harvey Weinstein. Now, whether this rises to the level of a civil action and something that she can collect damages on, we'll see. There's this now litigation over this. But the tactics were extraordinary and just reprehensible.
Yeah, I mean, just bringing it back to Roy Price, he bought Rose McGowan's screenplay. And after Roy tried to set up his girlfriend at Amazon with a deal, which he was told for, you know, "You can't do this," Harvey bought it. And we reported on this. And the response from the Weinstein Company is like, "Oh, this person is a talent that we've been following for some time," which was not exactly credible. I mean, this woman did not have an array of credits that would have necessarily caught the attention of the Weinstein Company. So this is a catch and kill with favors being done. And it really is an example of how this stuff works. Now, I will note that Harvey's lawyer, Phyllis Kupferstein, sent us at The Hollywood Reporter a statement. "Once and for all, Rose McGowan will be shown to be what she is, a publicity seeker looking for money from the moment she sought a multi-million dollar payout in return for not making these baseless allegations, which we rejected. We knew she was waiting for an opportune time to begin this." I mean, I don't know what else they can say. Very aggressive. But I imagine that maybe Phyllis Kupferstein is getting some cards and letters from people who feel that trashing Rose McGowan in this context is not the best look. Meanwhile, moving back to, you know, our new almost favorite subject, streaming wars. Turns out, Matt, I am a Disney Plus subscriber, apparently, even though I've done nothing because I have Verizon.
Yeah, Disney made a big deal or announced a big deal this past week where Disney Plus is going to be available for free to Verizon customers. And this is going to give a huge advantage. It's going to be a pre-installed user base for this new streaming service that they are launching on November 12th. And it's really a smart move, in my opinion, because all that matters to Disney is that they can achieve some scale, and they're never going to catch Netflix, but bring up their subscriber base to a number that is respectable where they can start making money off of it. And this is a good start.
I don't know this idea that they'll never catch Netflix. I mean, I know Netflix has a huge subscriber base, but I have to say, you know, I saw an ad for Disney Plus and it was quite attention grabbing. I mean, they have this insane amount of intellectual property. And I was looking at that ad and thinking, you know, people are going to do this. It's $7 a month, even if they don't have Verizon, in which case it's free for a year. The estimates I've seen that they'll get this many million in the first year seem very conservative to me. I don't see how you pass it up, especially if you have kids.
There were some interesting analyst reports this past week when the Verizon deal was announced, where the analysts are now upping the forecast of Disney Plus subscribers. Disney has said that they want between 60 and 90 million subscribers by 2024, and they're willing to sacrifice billions of dollars in television revenue that they are now going to be pushing in these licensing deals to the Disney Plus service. And the analysts are now saying that they expect Disney, thanks to this deal, to have about 18 million subscribers by the end of 2020, which would be ahead of some of these forecasts and give a good start on getting up to those lofty numbers after the first 5 years.
Meanwhile, Matt Zoller-Zeitz published in Vulture a sort of a cri de coeur about Disney putting classic Fox movies in its vault that people normally might rent and play in theaters. You know, old titles, they have a ton of them. I mean, we're talking about things like Alien, The Princess Bride, Moulin Rouge, all these old titles, and much older, of course. Things like Miracle on 34th Street and All About Eve, classic movies in some cases. And I will quote Mark Harris. He's a pop culture critic and film writer. He tweeted, "This is particularly important because Disney post-Fox acquisition is essentially a double-sized studio, by far the biggest in America in terms of revenue. What it's doing via this policy is suppressing a vast swath of film history that is not even its own." I'm sure Disney is going to have to sort this out, and maybe they haven't been able to process and digest. But on the other hand, they do have these streaming services, and it wouldn't surprise anyone if they paid all this money for Fox and hoarded classic movies.
Well, a bit of good news. The one movie they are not stopping from being shown is Rocky Horror Picture Show. So you can continue, Kim, to have your Saturday nights
those
booked
midnight up. Midnight screenings, yeah.
for the foreseeable future.
Yes, thank God for that. Thank you, Matt.
Thank you.
That's Matt Bellany, editorial director of The Hollywood Reporter.